on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, September 18th, 2025 edition, and we only have about 8 more trading days left in the quarter. So the fourth quarter is creeping up fast, and then we'll be into 2026, which promises to be another year full of challenges and volatility, both economically as well as geopolitically, and that always feeds back into markets. So we are here to give you, you know, unbiased view of how that is likely to impact your investments, your strategy. And we do this by answering your finance and investment questions and giving you data and perspective developed over 25 years of investment experience. So this hour, once again, is dedicated to you and your endeavor to reach financial freedom. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market activity and performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hello, my name is Margarito. I was calling about if they could tell me their feelings on Rocket Lab, RKLB. I'm thinking of getting a position in it, and I just wondered what their thoughts were. Look forward to hearing from y'all and keep up the great work. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Looking at Rocket Lab, and they develop rocket launch and control systems for space and defense industry. And I think the thought here is that we are going to spend more on rocket technology, space exploration, and we have the new space defense team, the department as well. So that is the idea. It's headquartered here in Southern California, Long Beach, California. But the problem is it just doesn't make any money. It loses money. Its return equity is negative, and it just continues to issue more and more shares. So to me, this is just a whole lot of hype. Sure, could there be follow through with the spending in regards to space from the government? Yeah, but I don't see much from the civilian market, as well as, you know, we have satellite launches. So that from a commercial standpoint is good, but we have other companies that do that more efficiently and more effectively. So to me, this is a whole lot of hype. And hype works when liquidity is abundant. But if you go back and look at the previous returns, when liquidity suddenly wasn't so abundant, like in 2022, this went from a high of around $14 to a low of $3 and change. And so it's rallied considerably. Now we're almost $23 billion from a market cap perspective. The good news is they don't have any debt, but they also don't have any cash flow or profits either. So I would absolutely pass on this. Actually, I think it's a pretty good short at these levels. Now, is it going to turn around and go down tomorrow? Maybe not, but it's certainly looking toppy. I will say that. And, you know, it could have another leg higher, but ultimately when liquidity ebbs, which will probably between now and sometime at the end of next year, this is a name that will probably go down considerably. So I find this to be a pretty good short, and I absolutely would not be buying Rocket Labs, RKL. Now, we have a lot to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about your 401k. And are you doing everything, or is it doing everything it could be? And there is some new legislation or directive, shall we say, from the White House in regards to 401k investments and private investments. We'll talk about why the returns that you might get from private investments is not going to make up for the lack of the saving side of your 401k or your investment strategy or your retirement strategy. So we're going to look at some numbers and explain why savings is far more important than those incremental return profile that a private investment might give you. So we'll look at that. Also, what's gold telling us? What is gold? You know, a lot of times you have to listen to the market. The market, more often than not, tells a more correct story than you're going to get anywhere. Whether that's traditional media, social media, alternative media, whatever media you want to talk about, the market is in and of itself a storyteller. And if you're listening, you can have a pretty good sense of not only what is happening in the broader world economically, geopolitically, etc., but also what is likely to happen, because there's the market's handicapping the future as well. So we'll look at that story. In addition, we'll look at the middle class and the fact that you're starting to see, it used to be a couple, you know, the last couple of years, it's been the lower class, lower income consumers that were feeling the strain, but you're starting to get more and more data points that the middle class is starting to feel the strain as well. So we'll look at some of that. And lastly, if we have time, how central bank monetary policy is evolving, and is it in a good way or a bad way? So we'll look at that story. We also have voice bank calls to answer. One is on fixed income, as well as Navitas Semiconductor Corporation, NVTS. We also have questions that came in via the comment section over on the YouTube channel as well. Now, we're going to head into a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now live at 888-99-CHART. But up next, I will comment on today's market activity.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. They'll be talking about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com. There's value in every InvestTalk podcast, so call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market today. It was overall a positive day for equities. And it was really on the small cap side. Small caps were up well over 1%. Small cap growth was up over 2%. And the S&P itself up about 0.5%. NASDAQ up just shy of 1%. And the Dow was up about 0.25% on the day. You had some big movers like Intel. Intel was up, and that really drove kind of the semiconductor index that was up about 23%. And that was in the back of their partnership with NVIDIA. So you saw some strength there that really had a large impact on markets overall. What else did we have? You had some other names like Plug Power that did very well, about 5%. And ultimately, it is a continuation from the Fed rate cut yesterday, but still kind of dominating the news cycle overall. Because when the Fed embarks on an easing cycle, that does tend to spark more credit creation from the banks, with the yield curve steepening. And that's likely what we will see over the next 6 to 9 months or so. That should extend this current growth cycle. Now, there are still headwinds. Tariffs are one of those, but it's clearly not enough quite yet to derail the growth cycle. And we did get a stronger dollar as a result of the Fed rate cut, which is interesting, but it's not unexplainable. In fact, I'm starting to view that rate cuts are actually, in the medium term, not great for the broader liquidity dynamics. Because what happens is, because we have so much debt, there is, when the Fed cuts rates, that's lower interest payments coming from the federal government. That's less income to your average person who owns treasuries, who owns maybe CDs, money market accounts, etc. These are now yielding accounts, yielding assets when they hadn't been for over a decade. And history shows there's a strong correlation between inflation and interest rates. I think as the rates come down, paradoxically, it actually will not be as good for the economy, kind of in the medium term, like I said. So that's why I think, 9 to 12 months out, things will probably, rate cut will actually be less stimulative than in the short term. I think in the short term, it is stimulative. There are people are going out the risk curve. Investors are going out the risk curve because of the easing cycle. But ultimately, it's about the amount of dollars flowing into the broader economy and the asset markets. And this, over time, will actually erode that. So you have to look at these in different time frames. Certain actions can be bullish or bearish short term and vice versa, and the opposite medium term or long term and vice versa. And so you have to look at it in kind of this new era of fiscal dominance, of so much debt that are on the balance sheets of corporations, of individuals, and it's on the sovereign level, right? And so that is something that I continue to believe we are okay for now, but a rate cutting cycle is actually not stimulative in the medium to long term because of that income component that it actually lowers overall for the broader economy. So that's where we're at, but so far, so good for markets. Now, let's go with another YouTube question. And Randy23 says, would love to hear your thoughts on microcap stock, Amerigo Resources, ARREF. ARREF is the symbol. Gotta love these microcaps. And Amerigold Resources is in the production of copper and molybdenum. I always hate saying that. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Usually these are names that don't have a lot of revenue. I don't have a lot of economic data either. Let me see here. So this is a U.S. company. Let me look at the market cap. It's going to be very small. $274 million. Let me see if I can get some data on geographical revenue. So Chile, it looks like their mines are in Chile. 88% is copper. And the balance is molybdenum. I hate that name. I hate that word. But it's a copper producer, and copper prices have been trending higher. So that is a positive, and that's why the stock has started to trend higher. And you're getting a penny stock. It trades for $1.70, but well off its lows. 2020, it bottomed out at 20 cents. Recently, the April lows, it was right around $1.11 or $1.20. Certainly, I like it. 5% dividend yield. That actually does pay a dividend. So I'm going to give this one a thumbs up. Good cash flow, like I said, good cash flow yield, good balance sheet. And I like the exposure to copper overall, but understand it's high risk and keep it limited as a percentage of your overall portfolio. Now we're heading into a break still to come, my focus point. And is your 401k doing everything it could be? Or are you doing everything you can to help achieve your long-term retirement goals? And we'll have more answers to your questions after discussing that topic. So I encourage you to call now on InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point concerns this question. Is your 401k doing everything it could be? Well, according to President Trump, the answer is no, that there is an executive order coming from the White House that directs regulators to create a framework that will allow 401k plans to give access to investors to alternative assets, such as private market investments, in hopes that there will be a boost to overall returns. But this kind of hides the biggest issue that most investors that are behind the curve have, and that is the lack of savings. Okay, return is only one component to the your overall financial picture. And when you run the numbers, there's a simple conclusion, and that is that savings is far more important than incrementally better returns. And there's a couple of very simple, there's a simple example of this. And it takes a look at two workers. One who starts at 25 years old saving and saves 10% of their salary and gets that company match. Usually it's around 3%. So total, about 13% total savings. And then you have a colleague, same salary, same growth in their career, salary-wise. But the other employee starts at 30, not far after, right? 25, 30, still relatively young. And they opt for the minimum contribution rate to get that match. And that's what we always say. You want to at least do that. But that's the bare minimum. And that's what this employee is doing. It's contributing. They're contributing 3%. They're getting a 3% match, so a total of 6%. So you're talking about 13% versus 6%, both collecting that nice company match that everybody needs to get. So we'll call that employee A, employee B. Well, employee A, once again, 13%, employee B, 6%. Let's say employee B invests in private equity in addition to their normal index funds that are available. And let's say it's 15% of their overall allocation, which is fairly hefty. Whereas employee A, they just invest in target dated fund, simple index funds. And let's say they retire at 65. Well, employee B, that still consistently saved, still consistently got that employer match. At the end of the 35 years, considering normal raises, would have about $2 million. And their annual return to be 8.9% compared to employee A, who just indexed, didn't do anything in the private space, earned about 8.4%. So still good, but about a half a percent worse in return. Well, employee A now has $3 million versus employee B has $2 million. So despite a better return, that savings difference was dramatic, especially year after year. And the power of compounding just worked better because there was more money in those funds. And so while if you're lucky, private investments may boost returns a little bit, that's in kind of a rosy scenario, especially because a lot of these private investments don't have the decades of return profile that equities and bonds do. So a lot of it is recency bias and, you know, best guesstimates of what private investments will do. But if you look at what Morningstar has looked at when they've looked at these private equity funds, they actually think that the odds of the returns are similar or probably slightly worse than public market funds because it's just a form of active management with typically higher fees. So the reality here is that this is probably not a great idea. It could work out fine, but more often than not, it's not going to work very well. And it doesn't solve a problem that 401ks typically have, which is trading too much, buying high, selling low, which oftentimes we talk about this on the show all the time, which is emotions drive decision-making when the average investor, average employee is making those decisions. Now, in the 401k world, most people set it and forget it for better or for worse. Now, from a behavioral standpoint, that's good. From a asset allocation standpoint, oftentimes that's not, because they're usually not invested properly in that way. But the bottom line here is that private equity, private investments are not going to save the day. It's about saving early and saving at least 10% in total. Closer to 15 would be ideal, and closer to 20 would be amazing. That's 20% of your salary. According to Vanguard, 54% of 401k participants 25 or younger contribute to the 401k. So that's not very many. And 82% between 25 and 34 contribute. So it's really about getting those numbers higher and making sure that they are at an adequate pace for your retirement goals. Now we're heading into a break. As I think you know, the InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes. So give it a call now at 888-99-SHARP.
...2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Duncan here from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I got a quick question on fixed income idea. I am trying to kind of build a small fixed income account. I already have some treasuries in it, and I was thinking about some bonds. But as a beginner slash medium like investor, what do you guys think of foreign bonds? The reason why I bring this up is, well, I actually went to Italy, had a great time there, and obviously the euro is stronger than the dollar. And then I was thinking, wait, would it be better for me to actually start thinking about currencies, fixed income in different currencies, such as like the euro? So I just wanted your two cents. I have a Fidelity brokerage, so I think I will probably have access to it. Their support line would definitely help me out. Would this kind of be too advanced for me? So looking for any type of help, your two cents, and have a great day. Bye.
I love this question. I also love Italy. Been there many times. And the answer to your question is, it's not too advanced as long as you understand the risks. When you're investing in foreign bonds of any kind, you have to understand the currency risk. Now, they can be foreign bonds denominated in dollars, but there's still foreign currency risk there, because ultimately, if their currencies fall because of, especially if the economy falls off a cliff there, and their ability to repay those bonds, those dollars, becomes more difficult, they could default. Okay, so a stronger dollar in that sense would be bad for those type of bonds. But you can buy Italian bonds denominated in euros. And if you're getting payback in euros, there's also currency risk there where, hey, the euro declines. Well, when you translate them back to dollars, well, it's going to be worth less. And so there's that foreign currency risk you need to consider. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just another risk factor you have to consider. So I have no issue buying them. I have no issue with shorting the dollar right now in the medium term. I think short term, you might see the dollar rally a little bit. But overall, having foreign bonds and a little bit of diversity in this environment is not the worst idea. Thanks for the call. Now let's keep things moving and play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hey there, this is Chuck from Wisconsin. My constant struggle is trying to figure out, when do I sell things that I bought? Currently, I'm looking at my portfolio. I've made a lot of gains in many of my stocks, and I kind of just want a general tip on, like, how do you exit plans for, like, maybe percentage gains or a timeline? I know a lot of portfolios like to make 15% a year, and so my thought is, well, if I've made 50% gain on a stock. Should I just be unloading on this stock and just be happy that I made 50%? It's like you want to keep holding it, but you know that you've already beat the market. Specifically, I wanted to know about British American Tobacco, BTI. I have a 60% gain in it. It seems like its momentum might be slowing down with the trade of like flooding into safe stocks. And so I was curious when I should consider selling BTI. Thank you.
Well, you have to look at your entire portfolio. Understand that you're going to have some big winners. You also probably have some losers as well. And it's about the combination of the portfolio and the overall return. So just because one position might beat the overall market or your goal doesn't mean you automatically sell it. Now, first off, what you need to do is you need to have a price target. What is a reasonable valuation that you want, that you would say, okay, this name now no longer is super attractive. Okay. And you need to know what that is before you go and buy it. Okay, that's number one. And if it reaches that, it isn't necessarily a time to sell at all, but it's probably a time you want to at least rebalance it, bring it back down to a lower allocation, and then potentially have a trailing stop, especially if the backdrop of the overall economy shifts. For example, BTI, it is non-cyclical. It's a cigarette producer. But there are some other factors here. It also pays a high dividend. So are interest rates falling or rising? They're falling right now. So that's been benefiting names like BTI, companies that have debt or pay a dividend, et cetera. So that is the positive for BTI right now. But if the economy reaccelerates, which it could in the shorter term because of that easing cycle and the steeper yield curve and more lending, then the money might come out of this and go into more cyclical names. And so you have to think of it from that perspective as well. What is the backdrop in the broader economy and what sectors should be overweight and underweight? And so you always constantly have to be monitoring that and thinking about how much exposure you have to each sector. This is what, you know, us professionals do. So in order to beat the professionals, this is what you have to do. I know it seems hard and complex, but you know, it's about understanding these concepts, gathering the data and applying them to portfolio effectively. And once again, that's a challenge, but if you are going to buy individual names, it's a challenge that you effectively take on if you want to beat the market, which is certainly possible, but it does take more work. As simple as that. So you're up a lot on BTI. I think from a valuation perspective, it is now fairly valued. It was pretty undervalued when it was in its 30s. Now it's in the mid 50s. So this is probably a good time to at least trim the name. It's still in a broader uptrend above the 100-day moving average. And that's probably what I would use for the out here. It's pretty much found support at the 100-day moving average consistently throughout this uptrend. And if that breaks for more than a couple of days, then you know that the broader trend may have reversed. So I would continue to hold it, but this is a good time to trim it just a bit. And you know, the issue you have with selling is something that most people have as well. So you are not the only one. Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about gold. And gold prices continue to plow to the upside. They've slowed down a little bit over the past, call it week and a half, kind of chopped sideways. It was overbought, so it makes sense. And the dollar's getting a bit stronger over the past couple of days. So you're getting a consolidation period. But you know, gold being around $3,700 an ounce and being up well off the lows from, 2023, when it was well below $2,000 an ounce, it's nearly doubled. Yeah, pretty much doubled since late 2022. And the reality here is, as I said at the top of the show, it's telling you something. It's telling a story. So what is it telling us? Okay, so there's a good case to be made that the broader story that gold is saying is that the U.S. fiscal situation is A, terrible, and the dollar is likely to decline over the medium to long term. That the attack on our institutions, mainly the Federal Reserve, that is something that, and the lack of independence that is creeping on the Fed is also playing into gold's rise. That inflation is no longer going to be part of the mandate, right? When you have a government takeover of a body like the Fed that has so much power, immense power, it's going to be used for political ends as opposed to the dual mandate that Congress is giving it. And so that is another aspect that why gold it continues to rally. And then you have the slowing U.S. economy, which ultimately, once again, will, over the medium term, long term, weaken the dollar because the economy will become less competitive. Now, why is it moving so much lately is the question. Is that those are part of it, but those are kind of issues that have been around for a little while. Now, the first and obvious one is the dollar has been weaker. The second one is that volatility is starting to rise a bit again. That's not it's not dramatic, but it is happening. And there's a correlation now, especially this year, between the rise in the VIX and the rise in gold. And so gold is uniquely set up to benefit from rising volatility and a weaker dollar. Now, over the medium to long term, you need consistent buyers of any asset for that asset to go up. And you see that with equities, right? The consistent buyer of equities are 401k investors and robo-advisor investors and just broader investors in the U.S. markets. A lot of them just simply buy the index. So what's happening in gold? And there are basically two groups that buy gold. One are convicted buyers, meaning not convicted in going to jail or anything like that, but they have strong conviction that they want to diversify their portfolios, their asset base in something that is not controlled by any government, that can't be confiscated from you, like what the U.S. did with Russia during the invasion of Ukraine. And these are buyers that buy ETFs. These are buyers like ETFs, like central banks, and broader speculators. And this is more of a macro risk hedging move from them. And it's driven by a broader thesis. So price direction is driven by these buyers. You also have opportunistic buyers who buy and dip and they're more traders, but that really just cushions pullbacks. It doesn't drive the broader trend. And according to the World Gold Council, the biggest buyers as of late, actually ETF buyers. So there are a lot of individual investors going in and buying gold. That was what drove the gold price in the first half of the year, but now we're in the second half of the year. And it continues to be those buyers as well as central banks. But what's different as of late, beyond just gold, is that the miners are breaking out as well. Now, historically, if you go look at the earnings profiles of these miners, you have good stretches where gold goes up, profits for miners go up, but it's usually short-lived because of the volatility and lack of convicted buyers in the gold market. But as geopolitical instability rises and the dollar has a more consistent downtrend, the market is starting to view these massive profits. Remember, most of these miners are producing gold at around $2,000 per ounce, give or take a little bit. Depends on the miner. And now at $3,700 an ounce, you can see there's a very large profit margin. And the trend remains up. And therefore, the market is starting to price in that these profits are not a flash in the pan. These are likely to be consistent for many, many years to come. And that we're in the early innings of the rally in the metal. That's what the breakout in the miners is telling us. So overall, gold is a risk hedge. It's a diversifying asset, and it's flagging the risks both monetarily from high U.S. debt and a Fed that is becoming more politicized. But it's also flagging geopolitical risk, both domestically and worldwide. And Goldman Sachs, they look at central bank gold purchases mostly in emerging markets, and they have taken a strong stair step higher since the invasion of Ukraine and, once again, the confiscation of Russia's treasury assets. So this is the story that gold is sending to markets. And as most people get up and consume their particular form of media and they pay attention, you should also more often than not pay attention to the story that markets are telling you as well. Now let's keep things going and swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank right now.
Hello, this is Paolo from Gaithersburg calling. Today I have a question for you guys about Powell Inc. It's an industrial name. I think it's like a mid to small cap. I'm not sure like if it's the right time to get in. I already started a small position just to check the stock, and curious about what you guys think about the company, if it has a good outlook for the next 5 years, let's say. Looking forward to for your answer on the show as always, and I appreciate the work you guys do. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at Powell Industries, and this manufactures power substation packages, switching gears, circuit breakers, generators, controls, motor control systems, etc. And this is doing very well because of the boom in AI data infrastructure. And this is one of those picks and shovel type of companies. They only made 5 cents in 2021, but made $12.29 last year. So it's make $13.63 this year and $14.15 next year. And the trend is obviously higher. Good relative strength, 93. Well, last quarter, revenues were actually down 1%. Earnings were only up 4%. Going forward, growth has slowed considerably. So that's the worry here. Now, the good news is it's not really trading at a very high multiple. You know, forward-looking earnings is about $14 on a $300 stock. It's about 20 times earnings, a little less or a little more. But overall, that is, it's a bit extended for a company that hasn't shown this level of earnings consistently. And that's my worry. And the cash flow, free cash flow is only $81 million on a market cap of $3.6 billion. So I like the name, but I think it's overvalued at these levels. It's heading into resistance. So it's a name that I keep on my watch list, but I would want more consistency before buying into POWL. Now we're heading into our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
Hey, Justin and Luke, a longtime listener here from Wisconsin. Been enjoying your show for 4 or 5 years now. I just appreciate it, and thanks for taking the time to share your investing insights with us. My question is that the company I work for recently merged with a slightly larger company and just found out we're going to be changing retirement plan managers from Fidelity to Principal Financial Group. I've done just a very brief research on the internet. Seems like Fidelity pops up generally as one of the top three with good customer service and one of the larger asset under management companies, but generally see Principal Financial Group falling anywhere in the top 10 on that list. And I've read some negative reviews regarding their customer service and trouble transferring accounts and some fees, but I don't know if those complaints are justified or warranted, but just curious what your opinion experience has been with Financial Group, if any. You know, I have all my Roth IRA health savings account, brokerage account with Fidelity right now, and just trying to keep it centralized. Do I roll my accounts over to Principal or just ride it out and when I retire, roll things back over to Fidelity? Thanks for what you do, guys. Bye.
Well, you don't really have much choice. Your company is moving to Principal, and you know, your 401k is going to go over that over there. You won't have the opportunity to roll that into an IRA until you're 59 and a half or you leave the job. are no longer a full-time employee. So that's just unfortunately how it is. Now, Principal, I haven't heard much bad about them. Fidelity is fine. I think they're bad when it comes to allowing their customers to use third-party apps. They kind of use an excuse to try to kind of gatekeep your data, which I think is terrible. So that's my biggest problem with Fidelity right now. They tend to go against their customers' wishes, and they use bad reasoning for that. But you know, that's just where you're going to have to go, and hopefully your investment options are solid over at Principal. Every plan is different, right? Just because it's one provider doesn't mean you're going to get the same investment options as someone else at Principal as well. So you just have to go with it. And if you leave your job, then you should roll that into an IRA. We use Schwab. We prefer Schwab, but if you want to keep it at Fidelity, you can do that as well. Now let's play one more question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I was hoping you could talk about a company called Navitas Semiconductor. The symbol is NVTS. I'm wondering if you think it looks like something that could be a long-term investment or something that seems too risky and maybe better suited for short-term traders. Also, I was wondering if you do happen to like it, how much of its any possible future potential might be related just to its partnership with NVIDIA. Thank you so much.
All right, looking at Navitas Semiconductor. This is a name that went public back in 2021. And it's really been all over the place. It looks like one of those, it looks like a public went public via SPAC and originally did well, went all the way up to $20 and change, but then fell not that long ago, all the way to $1.50. That was back earlier this year. Now we're up to $6.73. Now, they've never made money, and that's my worry. And so to me, it looks like the hype is all around their partnership with NVIDIA. How much will that actually drive future earnings? Well, based on estimates from analysts, I'm not very confident. While earnings are expected to improve a little bit, they're supposed to go from 25 cents last year, a loss of 25 cents, to a loss of 21 cents this year, and then a loss of 18 cents this year. None of that is, it's a bit better, but it's not a large improvement. Return equity remains negative. They have a good balance sheet. That's a good thing. And the technicals are fine. But until they find some level of consistent profitability, then no, this is not a long-term hold. And it is completely all about the short-term trends. And it's a trading vehicle really only. And that hype around NVIDIA and its products and the partnership they have with them certainly can ebb and flow and will ebb and flow. And so you'll see a lot of volatility. So no, this is not a long-term hold at the current time. It's more something you could trade. And, you know, the technicals are fine right now, so it could be a good bullish trade in the short term. But from a profit standpoint, it's just not there yet to hold long-term. Well, I'm Justin Klein. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your broader investment strategy, your tax strategy, your retirement strategy as a whole, whether that's Roth conversions, whether that is Social Security planning, whether that is saving for a kid's college or a child's wedding or whatever that is, we're here to help. I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button, and schedule a no-cost portfolio review with myself or Luke. And we thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which they can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or check out our videos over on YouTube. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.
a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.